We are holding on Kedalad Omadei's three lines from the bottom. We started talking about yesterday, the Mishnah had talked about a case where a building collapsed and you have somebody under the rubble where, among other things, you're not sure if it's a Jew or a Goy, and we said then you go and dig it out. We had Shmuel telling us that you don't go and pikuach nefesh according to Ruv. We had Shmuel telling us that you don't go according to Ruv in pikuach nefesh, which meant, so we had a case where, for example, you have a bunch of people live in one chatzer, most of them goyim, one Jew, they all left to another chatzer, or some of them went to another chatzer, and then a building collapsed over there. So we say when only some of them left, then we say you go according to the Rav, and since the Rav were goyim, then chances are that the person who left for there is a goy, and therefore you don't do anything on Shabbos. Whereas if they all went to another chatzer, then you say that since there was a Jew among them, then there's a chance that he might be the one. The expression in the Gemara had been deporish kulu and deporish mitzasayu, that all of them left or some of them left. There are actually a couple of different ways that Rishonim have to learn, we touched on that a little bit yesterday, to learn what exactly the scenario is. Rashi explained, for example, that it meant that all of them went from that chotzer to another one. Now, at that point, we don't have kavua anymore. We can't call kavua k'mech tzal mech the dummy. But nevertheless, since there's a chazaka that there was a yid there, then therefore we still work to dig it. Not really transfer the kavua, but that's where Shmuel is saying we don't go according to Rui. Whereas if only some of them left, we don't know whether there was a yid in the second chotzer at all. Then we would go according to the Rui. That was what Rabbi Yochanan said. The assumption, in other words, is that Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan agree, and they're just talking about different scenarios. But now, so we're bottom of Pedalot on a day. So, Miyama Shmuel Hachi, did Shmuel in fact say that you go according to Rav when it comes to Pekuach Nefesh, that you don't go according to Rav when it comes to Pekuach Nefesh? V'hotznan, we learn in a Mishnah, there's a series of Mishnayos in the Sefer Machshirin, of all places, that talk about a din of what happens when you have a city that's majority Jews or majority Goyim or half and half. It comes in over there because it's related to other cases over there involving Tum of Atara. Anyway, so the Mishnah says, Matzabat Tinek Mushlach. If you have a city which is some Jews and some Goyim, and you find an abandoned baby over there, Im Roiv Kusiyim, so we say if the majority of the people in town are Goyim, then we assume Kusiyim really is a change by the censor. It's supposed to say Goyim or Nochrim or what have you. So then Kusi, we assume that this abandoned child that we found is a Goy. The Im Roiv Yisrael, if most of them are Jews, then we assume that he's a Jew. Mechtzal Mechtzal Yisrael, if there's exactly half and half, then we assume he's a Jew. Now, V'omer Rav, but Rav said, Now, before we get to Shmuel's opinion, let's just clarify what the Mishnah means. First of all, Rav says, "Lo yishanu elah hachyosei." This that we're saying that if it's mostly Jews, we consider this on this abandoned baby a Jew is only as far as lah hachyosei. Rashi, there's a Rashi in Ksubas, where this Gemara is also over there, that says that it means, in other words, as far as giving him food, as far as giving him tzedakah. That you have a mitzvah to where you have a mitzvah to support him like you would any other yid. But to say that he's a yid with yichus, to say therefore, in other words, that if it's a girl, that a kohen should be allowed to marry her, that not because there is a chance that it is a goyish girl, and after all, then even if we're magaya her, she's going to be a geyerus, and a kohen can't marry a geyerus. Rashi explains, in other words, now, Bechlau, the fact that the baby was abandoned, the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin, that there's the concern, even if everybody in town is Jews, there would be a concern maybe that this child is a mamzer or what have you, and that's why they abandon them. But Rashi says, the Gemara explains over there, you have scenarios where we don't have to be concerned about that. The rule over there is you can have a baby that was just abandoned and left without anything. The baby is going to die of exposure or whatever. Then we say that there's a chance that the baby is a mamzer or what have you. But if you have the baby was taken care of in a way that shows that the parents were concerned for him or her, and the only reason they put him out in the street is because they themselves are poor and they can't afford to keep this child, then we don't have to worry about them being a mamzer, but we do have to be concerned. In this case, if some of the people in town, even if most of the people in town are Jews and a minority are goyim, still this baby might be from that minority, therefore we can't allow a goyim to marry her if it's a girl. Shmuel says the relevance of that we say if most of the people in town are Jews, then this baby is assumed to be a Jew, is as far as digging up rubble if they're buried under it on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur. So we see only Shmuel is saying only if most of the people in town are Jews do we do that, but not if it's half and half. So and certainly not if it's mostly goyim. So what are you telling me before Shmuel that we don't go in the Koach Nefesh after the Loiv? We see over here, based on Shmuel's explanation of that Mishnah, that it's not so. We do go according to the Loiv. The answer is, ki itmar b'Shmuel aresh itmar. No, when Shmuel said the word, he's actually referring to the first part of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah had said, im kusi, that if the majority of people in this town are goyim, then we assume this baby to be a goy, omar Shmuel, in pikuach nefesh, ain't a kain. So Shmuel informs us, you should know as far as pikuach nefesh, it's not like that. Even though there's a greater than average chance that this child is a goy, and we're going to say in a second, that means, in other words, even that we're allowed to give them tray for food to eat. Nevertheless, Shmuel is saying, as far as the Koach Nefesh, we don't assume that there is a chance that this child is a Jew, and therefore we do the Koach Nefesh for them on Shabbos. Which means, so the Ramban talks about in that case, it could be then that the Gemara is taking back what we assumed before, that Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan agree. We could in fact say that they're disagreeing, because Rabbi Yochanan wouldn't necessarily subscribe to that, because he had talked about the case over there, again, where some people left to go from one chotzer to another, and he says you don't necessarily start digging up the rubble in that case, implying that he does go according to Ruiz in such cases.
What about the Chilul Hashem? I mean, what about,
We talked about in those times, there was a valid reason that you would be able to give, you would be able to say, and the Goyim would accept this, that only for people who observe Shabbos do we break Shabbos, for those that not, then not. As I mentioned yesterday, Rav Moshe has a tshuva about it, where he says, listen, nowadays nobody's going to accept any such excuse, and therefore when there's no other alternative, for example, when there's an emergency and they need all available personnel there right now, then you do what you have to do. But we're talking about according to the original din over here. Okay. Now, by the way, let's figure out what we mean in the Mishnah when we're saying over there we have Roiv Kusiyim versus Roiv Yisrael or whatever. Im Roiv Kusiyim Kusi Lamai Hiksa. So when we say that if most people in town are Goyim, then we assume that this found baby is a Goy. According to Shmuel, who said, Rashi explained, the question is on Shmuel. If he says that you work to save his life on Shabbos, then for sure that means also that if he's poor, you have a mitzvah to give him food. So in what sense are we considering him a goy? The answer is Amar Papa Lachilu Nevelus. As far as that we can give him tray for food. We can assume to that extent that he's a goy, and therefore we don't have to be concerned. If it was a Yiddish child, then we would say if he himself eats, then okay, Beis Din is not necessarily responsible to prevent him, but we're not allowed to give him. But because we can assume that this child is a goy, then therefore we're able to actually give him today for food. It actually has an interesting expression over here, by the way. Ad she yigdal v'yikabel all of geirus, until he gets older and becomes a ger. It almost sounds from Rashi's wording that he's obligated to become a ger when he becomes older. And actually, so the Nitziv has an interesting discussion about that, and not everybody agrees to that. The Rambam, for example, makes no mention of such a thing. And the Nitziv writes in one of his Truvas and in some other places that maybe what it is given that we're saying, why are we saying this child is assumed to be a goy only because of Roiv, but the dinim of Roiv don't necessarily apply to goyim. So therefore, there is, after all, a chance that this child is a Jew, and he himself doesn't know. Therefore, when he gets older, he may be obligated, al pi halacha, to become a yid, to be on the safe side. Okay. What about im roiv Yisrael Yisrael l'mayhu? So we said if most people in town are Jews, then the baby is assumed to be a Jew. What as far as what halacha? In other words, the question is, Rashi says, if already when it's half and half, we're saying, if it's half and half, we can't give the kid nevelus, because then there's an equal chance that he's a Jew as a goy. So what advantage is there? So what advantage is there if there's majority Jews that we say we for sure consider him a Yisrael? That would be lahasu le'avidasai, as far as that if he lost something, you have to return it to him. So Rashi explains that, so Rashi explains that would, in other words, according to Shmuel, where we said that in all cases we work on pekuach nefesh for him, and therefore and therefore lahachayosei. So therefore, so now we need an extra advantage according to Shmuel, and that advantage is that we return him something that he did, and we return him something that he lost. Whereas if we assumed him to be a goy, we would not. So Tosfos actually explains the point is the Gemara mentions elsewhere that to return an aveda to a goy is actually a serious aveda unless you're doing it in order to make a kiddush Hashem. But where you have a scenario where it's not going to make any kind of kiddush Hashem, then you're not only obligated to, but you're not allowed to, because then you're being mechazit. What is he going to use that money that he lost, or this object that he lost, whatever the monetary value, he's going to be using it for things that are not necessarily appropriate for a yid. So therefore, you're being mechazik, somebody who's doing averus. So most goyim in those times were not keeping shev mitzvahs, and therefore, yeah. So the point is that even so, if there's roiv Yisrael, then we have a mitzvah to return him his lost object. Okay. Mechzal mechzi Yisrael l'mayhilchsa. When we say if it's exactly half Jews and half goyim, then we also consider him a Yisrael. As far as what halacha is that relevant? It's relevant as far as the dinim of nizikim. Now, the Gemara tells us in Bava Kamma that you have like this. We know that if a yid's ox gores another yid's ox, that it depends. If the ox was tam, then you pay half the damages, and if it's mord, then you pay full damages. The Gemara tells us if a Jew's ox gores a goy's ox, then the Jew is potter. And if a goy's ox gores a Jew's ox, then he's chayav nezek shalom, even if the ox was tam. So the Gemara explains over there that it has to do with an idea also with Shev Mitzvah Nenoyach, because the Goyim rejected Shev Mitzvah Nenoyach, therefore Hashem, so to speak, was masking their money regarding that din. The Rambam gives a bit of a balabatish reason why we apply that only in that one case. He says because, after all, in Goyish law, they don't have a difference between tam and muad, and in Goyish law, they don't necessarily hold a person responsible for the damage that his ox did at all. My ox did it. I wasn't there. So therefore, so if a Jew's ox gores a Goyish ox, we tell him, listen, you know what, according to your own laws, the Yid won't be responsible, so you don't have a leg to stand on. And vice versa, if the goy's ox gores a yid, we tell him, you know, according to your laws, there's no difference between tam and mord, whereas according to our laws, there is. So pay up. Anyway, so now in this case,
and
so
if a gores a goy's ox gores a person, and it was tam, then it's chayav nezek.
I'm not sure about that. I don't remember actually whether that's the case. But yeah. Okay.
He would be
kind of the maximum monetary punishment, but I'm not sure. I think they would also stone it, but I mean in that case where it killed a person, but I'm not 100% sure about that. I guess when we get to Bava Kamma in a couple of years, we'll talk about it. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara says Heichi Dami. Okay, so what's the scenario over here? Do we mean that a Jew's ox gored an ox that belongs to this guy who was found as a child in this city that's exactly half Jews, half Goyim? And we're saying the question is whether the Yid has to pay or not. Why should we say that he has to pay? Nicely, Raya Vinishko. Let the guy bring proof that he's a Yid and he's entitled to that payment, and then we'll pay him. That he's a yid, because the case is a Jew's ox gored his. So he would be the one who's coming to Beis Din and saying, pay up, your ox, tam or mord, as the case may be, gored mine, so we will tell him. So why should we have to pay him? Tell him, I'm motz mechabel avaraya, bring proof that you're a Jew, and then we'll pay you. So the answer is, loit zricha de nag chetori de day, chetori de dan. The case is the other way around, where his ox gored a Jew's ox.
So therefore, palga yohilei. So now, let's say that ox was, so now that ox was a cow. So now the yid is saying, listen, you're a goy, you have to pay me the full amount. What he can do is like this. Half he has to pay palga yohilei. Half he has to pay no matter what, because one way or the other, whether he's a Jew or a goy, he's responsible for that half. Idach, palga, as far as the other half, neimalei, this guy who was found and now has grown up can say, I see Raya, the lobby, Suralano, you want the full nezek when this ox is a tam, bring proof that I'm not a Jew, Ushkirl, and then you'll be able to get your other half. But otherwise, I maintain that I'm a Jew, and therefore you can't collect the other half from me. That's what the Mishnah means. We're saying when we say that in that case where it's exactly half and half, then we assume that he's a yid. In other words, not, we don't know for sure. We said that, for example, we said we don't necessarily consider him a yid, but for purposes of this particular din, we do, because it's possible that he is, and we don't know one way or the other, and the other guy doesn't have any proof. And actually, the Ritva asks an interesting question, and in that case, don't we have a case over here where he's sort of moed b'mitzvah us? You have he's agreeing that he owes half, and the question is whether he owes the other half. Why don't we make him pay up for that? So the Ritva talks about, because you have, like this, you can say, when do you apply that? When he himself could have known, but he himself has no way of knowing either, whether right. He's a yid or not. So therefore, you don't apply that. Now, there are Rishonim who learn that that's not the case. Even in such a case, he would have to pay the other half. So they answer, so the Shach gives an answer based on that opinion, that on the other hand, the other guy is not making a tainus bori either. The other guy is not saying, for sure you're a goy, pay up. He's saying, maybe you're a goy. So that being the case, then, that's not a strong enough claim to make the other guy have to pay the other half. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah, Misha Nuffel all of Mapolis, we said that you have a case where a building collapsed on somebody, and we had three sfeikas in the Mishnah. We said, Suffolk Shom, Suffolk Ain't a Shom. It's a Suffolk whether he's there or not, meaning whether he managed to get out alive. And Suffolk Chai, Suffolk Ness, Suffolk whether he was alive or dead, and Suffolk Kusi, Suffolk Yisrael, Suffolk whether he was a goy or a yid. So the Gemara says, my karma. What do we mean? Are we talking about that all these fakes? What's the chiddush of all of them? And the answer is loy meboya karma. It's a needless to say thing. Loy meboya Suffolk Husham, Suffolk Enisham. Needless to say, the first Suffolk where we're saying we don't know whether he's there or not. And we're saying that if he's there, we know that he's still alive. Sure, the mafakhan. Then of course we unbury the rubble in order to get him out. Elaf, bilu, suffolk, chai, suffolk ness, even if it's a suffolk, whether he's alive or dead, mafakhan. Then we also start unburying. The loymi boya suffolk chai, suffolk ness, Yisrael. And not only that, we at least we know that he's a yid, we just don't know whether he's alive or dead. Elaf, bilu, suffolk, kusi, suffolk, Yisrael, mafakhan. Even if the case is to begin with, we don't even know whether it's a yid or a goy, we still do that. There is a Rishimus of the Rebbe, and Rishimus number test above, people were circulating it around last week or a couple of weeks ago in connection with the whole thing in Surfside, where the Rebbe goes into great detail analyzing Apichsidus, the story over here about this collapsed building and the various sphakas that we have over here and various other details of the Gemara that we're coming to now. The Rebbe starts by explaining that the collapsed building represents, you have the Eibishter built a building, the Eibishter built a world, and right now it seems like a collapsed pile of rubble. Sometimes you have a person himself who thinks that the world, you know, created itself, or it's random or whatever, doesn't realize that Hashem created it. Or you have even a person himself realizes it, but he lives in a world after the Chet Tzedak when everything is jumbled up and it all looks like everything is just collapsed and random. So then you have a few different possibilities. You can have the person is alive, meaning, in other words, that even within that, he still is alive, Viruchnius. So then we're saying we pull him out of the rubble. We work to unbury it and help him re-realize and then to be poiled on the world at large that it's not a random pile of rubble, that it is a building. It is an orderly world that Hashem created for a purpose. Then you have, not only that, it's even a suffolk whether he's bad or not. You have a suffolk whether he's alive or dead or beruchnius or not, and you still can be poil on him. And even if he might be so dead beruchnius that he's possibly even like a goy, nisnak rumais of la'avav shabashmayim, that he acts in a way completely estranged from Hashem, nevertheless there still can be hope for him. And the Rebbe goes on to explain that actually in those last two cases, we're saying over here that if we end up finding that he's dead, or we end up finding that it's a goy, then we don't continue unburying. So that, how does that represent an avodah? That means, in other words, in those cases, you just unburying him is not enough. You need to work on reviving him, beruchnius, because just pulling him out of the rubble, in other words, just showing him that that Hashem created the world and Hashem runs it with a purpose, is not going to be enough to get him back onto, the right path. You need more than that. In fact, the Rebbe also talks about over there that you have the Gemara chooses its words very carefully over here. In between the first and the second suffix, the expression is "Isei Chayhu." If he's there, then he's alive. In the second case, we say "Diyisrael." So, in other words, the idea is that in the first case, we're saying no matter what, he is there. He's definitely there. Beruchnius, whereas we're saying in the second case, we have to stress, even though it's a suffix, whether he's actually descended to the level of a goy, nevertheless, the Yisrael, you should realize that after all, he is a Yisrael, and therefore you still have to work on not only unburying him, but reviving him, Beruchnius. It's a long, long thing, and this didn't do it justice at all. You really have to learn the Rishimis inside to get the flavor of it. Anyway, let's go on. The Mishnah had said, Matzu Chaim Afak, and if they find him alive, then they continue unburying him. The question is, of course, if they find him alive, they continue. The answer is, yeah, but the chiddush is, even if he's not going to live for very long, he's been badly injured and he's only going to survive a couple of extra minutes, nevertheless, that chayesha is reason enough to continue being mechal Shabbos and continue digging him out. As in fact, now we're going to continue at the bottom of the Amud and going on to Amud Beis, the source in Torah, where we know that you're Mechal Shabbos to save a person's life, or even for Suffolk for Kuach Nefesh. One of the Limudim over there is actually the idea that we say, violate one Shabbos on his behalf so you can keep many others, but we're saying even when that reason doesn't apply as such, nevertheless we still do it. Okay. We said if he's dead, then you leave him. So the question is, Hanani Pshita. Obviously, once he's dead, what are you supposed to do for him? Why should you continue breaking Shabbos? There's no Pekuach Nefesh. The answer is, Light Sricha the Rabbi Yehuda ben Lachish. The Chiddush is, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Lachish, D'tanya, we learn in a Braisa, in a different context, Ein Matzilinus Ames Mepnead Leita, if a fire breaks out on Shabbos and there's a dead body in that house or in that chotzer, you're not allowed to move the body to a different place because the body is Muktzah. Or you could even be talking about where the next chotzer over doesn't have, so Rashi explains the case is the next chotzer has an eruv, so the question is the problem of mukta. Now there are cases, you are allowed in certain cases to move a dead body on Shabbos together with something non-mukta. For example, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos together with a loaf of bread or a child, but here we're talking about, let's say you don't have those available. So the Tanakhama says you're not allowed to do that. Amar of Yehuda. So Amar of Yehuda ben Lakish, Shamaiti, Shmatzilin, Sames, and Pnad Leika. But of Yehuda ben Lakish says, I heard from my Rabbeim that you are allowed to. So therefore, the point is, even according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, so Vachfilu, Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, like Amar, Ella, you know why he says in the case of a fire, you're allowed to. Ella, mitoch sha'odam bohol al me. So we know that psychologically, a person is usually in a panic because of their dead relative. They don't want the body to get burned up. So Eli Shorisle, if you don't allow him something that's only an Isur Dirabanan to carry the body to another chotzer that they have an Eruv between them after all, Rashi learns. All it is just a matter of mukta. So if you don't allow him that heter, also the chaboye, he may be in such a panic to save the body that he's gonna forget himself and put out the fire and then be over on an Isur Daraisa. Aval Hocha, but over here, Eli Shorisle, if you don't allow him to keep on digging up the rubble, my Israel the Mevad, what is there that he's going to do? There's nothing that he would end up doing that's going to be Chil Shabbos Daraisa anyway. Therefore, even Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish is going to agree that we tell him in that case, leave the body there and you can continue digging it out after Shabbos. So that's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, Ad Heichan Hu Bodek, up till what point do you have to search for the body? So let's say you find somebody over there in the rubble. He looks dead. He's not moving any limbs. So but you have to know the truth. Well, Das Emes. Here also the Rebbe Vishtel Zachan, that expression of Rashi Badasa Emes, and says that this also has to do with what we said before, that we're talking about a person who's buried in the Ruchniistic rubble and needs to be unburied and revived over there. We need to Ladasa Emes. We need to be shown the truth that the Eivishter runs the world in an orderly way. So how far do we need to check before we know that he's for sure dead? Ad Choitma. So the answer is until his nose. If you see that there's no breath coming out of his nose, his nostrils, yeah. So if you see that there's no breath coming out of his nostrils, then you know he's dead. The Yesh Omim Ad Liboy. Yesh Omim, you have to check until his heart. See if he has a heartbeat. Also, Bodekum Motze Elyonim Mesim, if you searched and you found the people in the higher levels of the rubble are dead, Lo Yom Rukvam Mesu Atachtonim, you shouldn't say automatically that means the people further down are automatically dead. In fact, Maisa Hoyo Motze Elyonim Mesim Atachtonim Chayim, it once happened, in fact, that they found the people up further up were dead and the people further down below were alive. Again, in that Rishimus, the Rebbe points out, the Ruchnius as well, sometimes you have a person who seems to be even lower down, might be the one who actually manages to hold on to some Ruchnius to Techaius, whereas the one who ostensibly is higher up is the one that is in a worse situation. Yeah. Okay. Now, we're saying we have the Machlokas, whether we check until the nostrils or until the heart, Nema Hani Tanoi Ki Hani Tanoi. Should we have to say that the Machlokas between those Tanoim reflects the Machlokas of other Tanoim? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Mehechan Avlad Noitzer, from where is a baby formed in the womb? What part of the body is formed first? Meiroshei, the head is formed first, and the head includes the nose. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Mimei imi ata goizi. David HaMelech says to Hashem, from my mother's womb, you goizi. Now, the simple meaning of goizi means you drew me out, you pulled me out. We have another pasuk that associates the word gozi with the head, gozi nizrich vashlichi. The Navi says to the Jewish people, cut off your hair and throw it away. In other words, as a sign of avelos, that there's going to be a churban because you're not doing tshuva. So we see, in other words, that the word gozi or gozi is associated with the hair, which is on the head. Therefore, we see that mimeiniyaka gozi means you created my head first in my mother's womb. Abba Shol, on the other hand, says that the baby is formed first from its navel. And then it gives out roots in every direction, and the baby is formed that way. So in other words, on the face of it, the machloekas over here is similar. The opinion that says that you look until his nose, until his nostrils, reflects the opinion that to begin with, when a person is created in the womb, then their head and their nose is created first. The other opinion that says that you check until their heart, until their midsection, would reflect Abba Shol, that their midsection is created first. In fact, when we had before, Ad Yesh Emim Ad Liboy, there is a girsa that some of the Rishonim have, Ad Tiburay, that you check until his navel. So it would be the exact same machlokas. The Gemara says, no, Afilu Tema Abba Shol, not necessarily. You could say even that the first opinion, that you check until the nose, goes even according to Abba Shol. Ad Kam Le Ka'amar Abba Shol Hosam Elul Ini Yitzira. Abba Shol is talking about over there when a baby is first formed, the Kol Midi Mimitzi Ose Mitzar. When a thing is created, when a thing is formed, the middle of it is formed first. Earlier in the Masechta, for example, the Gemara had talked about different opinions, how the world at large was created, where you had the opinion that the Evan Shsia in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is the center of the world, was created first, and then everything comes around that. So the same thing over here, it starts from the midsection. Abala in the Korach Nefesh, but when it comes to digging out a body, and then saving a person's life, Afila Abba Shol Moidi, even Abba Shol is going to agree to Iku Chayusa Ba'afehu, that the main sign of life in a person is in his nose. Dichtiv Kolash and Nishmasua Chaim Ba'afav. As the Pasuk says, about the marble, every creature that had the breath of life in its nostrils. So we see that defined as life as long as there's breath in the nostrils. And Amar Papa, Machloikas Mimata Lamaila, this whole Machloikas is, if you're starting from the bottom, meaning you find the person's legs first, and then you're digging towards their head. So now the question is, once you found their midsection, and you found their heart, and you didn't find a heartbeat, do you stop over there, or do you continue going until the nose, in case they're still breathing?
Avam Maira Lamata, but Rav Papa says if you find the head first and you unbury that, then given the bodak layab chaitmai, once you checked until the nose and you didn't find any breath, shuvein itzarech, then you don't need dichtiv kolash nishmas ruach chaim ba'afo. The Ruchnius that ever talks about in that Rishimus that the from above to below and below to above refers to Isarusa de la Ela versus Isarusa de la Sata, and the question is, in other words, what's the primary, where do we find the primary Ruchnius to the highest of a person, in their heart, representing that their midas are still in good working order, or in their heart, in the sense that Moyach Shalat Alalev, and Rav Papa is telling us that if you have Isarusa de la Sata, Isarusa de la Ela, that helps you unbury and restore this person to full Yiddish vitality, then for sure we look at the Moyach first. Only when we're going Mimata Lamaila, when we're avoiding Malamata, then we have to consider do we look primarily at the Midas, or do we look primarily at the Moyach in that case as well. La Halacha, by the way, this is where this our Gemara over here is the major source for the whole discussion that they have in Halacha about brain death and other such things. At what point in halacha is a person considered dead? You have the famous question. You know, you can have a person whose brain is non-functional, but their heart is still beating. What's the din over there? Are they considered alive or dead? Are you allowed to disconnect the machines? Are you allowed to take organs from them for transplant? Our Gemara over here is the major source for that whole discussion. What the din about that are?
That's what Rav Moshe said. Why do you want to choke him to death?
Something like that. So yeah, Moshe has various truvas about it. The Shevet Halevi has truvas. The Tzitz Eliezer, yeah, everybody in contemporary times has something to say about it. Yeah. Okay. So now. Right. Yeah. I did see most of them.
I believe so.
Yeah, most of the big poskim say that brain death is not considered death in halacha. You have, as the Gemara is saying over here, you need a cessation of heartbeat or breathing. I did see something where Moshe had a discussion about it with Tendler, and said that if there would be a way to demonstrate that the brain really is completely dead, which therefore that also controls breathing and the heartbeat and so forth, then you would have a reason to say that the person might be considered dead by halacha. Yeah.
And there's no way.
But there's no way, practically speaking, because we're told a goisus, you know, a person who's on their deathbed, you're not even allowed to move them because that any little motion can be the last thing that kills them. So, yeah. Okay. Now we're talking about this whole idea of the pikuach nefesh on Shabbos. So now, what's the source that we're allowed to do this? What's the source that we're allowed to be mechalal Shabbos for pikuach nefesh? Or even in this case, we're talking about not so much vaday pikuach nefesh, but suffik pikuach nefesh. After all, I mean, the whole point is over here, we don't know whether the person is alive or dead in there. We don't know whether it's a goy or a yid, et cetera, et cetera. What's the basis that should say that we should be mechalal Shabbos in order to potentially to save their life? So that's what we're going to discuss now. Now, we did learn a few days ago that we said that most things are overridden for the sake of pikuach nefesh, except for the zara gilar ayis and shvichas damim. So why do we need separate limudim for Shabbos over here? So a number of the mefarshim on the Gemara over here ask that question, and they give various answers. There's a sicha in Chelek Chav Zayin where the Rebbe analyzes it and says that one way of looking at it might be to say that with other mitzvahs we say they're overridden, but in other words, lachatchila you shouldn't, as opposed to with Shabbos we would say hutra, that's completely mutter, everything that needs to be done to be mechal Shabbos for the sake of saving a person. Then the Rebbe says, on the other hand, it's not necessarily can you learn that way, because there are poskim, possibly even the Rambam, who hold that it's even dechuya. And so the Rebbe goes on to explain, the vort is that what we're saying, the reason why we need a limud over here, particularly as far as Shabbos, is to say, in other words, that it's part of the observance of Shabbos that you have Shabbos and then you have, but if a person's life is in danger, then we set aside Shabbos for that purpose. Part of the actual kiyum of the mitzvahs of Shabbos is saving a person's life, if saving a yid's life, if such a situation comes up. So where do we know that from?
So the Gemara says, "Chvar hoyer Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Lozman and Azariah mahalchen baderech." It happened once that Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Lozman and Azariah were walking on the road. The Levi Hasader, along with them, was Levi Hasader. Rashi says, "I don't know what Hasader means." A couple of different explanations, a couple of gersois, one of them being Hasarad, meaning that he made uniforms. But another explanation, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says Hasader is he would regularly be Masader, he would arrange the words of the Chachamim into some kind of logical order so people could remember. Anyway, so he was there. The Rabbi Shmuel, Bnei Shmuel, Rabbi Lozman Azariah, and also there was Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Lozman Azariah, Mahalchen Acharehen, this Levi and Rabbi Shmuel were walking behind them because you have the greater Talmid Chacham walking in front and they're walking behind the Talmid. Nishala She'ela Zubifnehem. And they were asked the following question, Minayim LeBikruach Nefesh Adoichas HaShabbos. How do we know that Bikruach Nefesh is Doichas HaShabbos? Nen Rabbi Shmuel V'Omar, so Rabbi Shmuel spoke up first and said, like this, you have the Torah tells us, the Torah tells us that if you catch a ganav breaking in and you kill him, then ain loy domim, then there's no guilt for blood. He's considered as though like he had no blood. He's a dead man walking. So what do we see from that? Says Rabbi Shmuel, umazesh suffak al momen ba suffak al nefashis ba. Now after all, this ganav is coming. He's not necessarily coming to kill. He's coming. He may only be coming to steal, and it's only a suffak whether he's coming to kill. And we know how serious murder is. Bloodshed makes Eretz Yisrael tomei and causes the Shechina to leave the Jewish people. As Rashi quotes relevant psukim from this week's parasha that talk about that. And yet, nevertheless, because of that suffix, we're allowed to save the Ritzeach himself, the Ganav himself, from potential Ritzicha by killing him. How much more so the Koach Nefesh should be Deicha Shabbos? Nen Rabbi Akiva v'Amar, Rabbi Akiva spoke up and said another way of learning it. The pasuk says, "V'chiyazid isha re'ehu v'gomer," that if one person kills another one deliberately, we say "me'im mizbechi tekachenu lamus." We take him away if he's a koyin and wants to come do the avoda. We still take him away from there. We don't tell him go do the avoda first. We take him away from there and take him to Beis Din and judge him, implying though "me'im mizbechi v'loyma al mizbechi." Now the implication is only because he's next to the mizbeach, he hasn't started the avoda yet. Do we take him away from there? But if he's already on the Mizbeach, he already started an Avodah, then we allow him to finish that Avodah before we take him away, and we allow him to finish his Avodah, and only then do we take him to Beis Din to judge him. And that rule that we distinguish between whether he's about to start the Avodah or actually started it is where he himself is the one who committed the crime, and we have to see whether he needs to be executed. But when it comes to keeping somebody alive, meaning suppose that we know that this Kohen knows evidence that will exonerate somebody else who's being tried and based in. Then even if the Kohen is in the middle of the Avoda, we tell him, stop what you're doing and come to based in and give aiders. So Rabbi Akiva says, "Umazesh sofik yesh mamash b'dvarav, sofik ein mamash b'dvarav." Now, when you think of it, this Kohen, we don't know for sure that the evidence that he's going to give is necessarily going to exonerate the guy. We don't know whether what he says has any mamashus to it. And ba'avoida doicha Shabbos, and avoida is so important that it overrides Shabbos. Nevertheless, we interrupt the avoida for potential pikuach nefesh. For potential saving a life, how much more so that Pekuach Nefesh should override Shabbos? In other words, if Avoda is Deicha Shabbos and Pekuach Nefesh is Deicha Avoda, then how much more so Pekuach Nefesh is Deicha Shabbos? Next, Nenner Rabbi Lozer and Azariah spoke up, but Omar, and he says he was in the third way of putting it. Madach Mila, which involves only one of the 248 limbs of a person, Doicha is a Shabbos, and yet Mila Bismana, that is, overrides Shabbos. Kavachoymer, the whole Gufa, should Doicha is a Shabbos. How much more so saving his whole life? So Rashi explains, in other words, the point is that Mila, if Mila is not done, then eventually there can end up being a Chiyuv Koris. The what it is if a person goes his whole life without having a bris milah, then he's chayav kodes at the end of his life. So therefore, so in other words, now doing a bris milah on him on the one limb saves him from a future potential kodes. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Chananel apparently doesn't like that explanation because, okay, future potential kares, that's not what we're dealing with over here. We're dealing with suffix b'koach nefesh or whatever. And then what would be the point of mentioning it's one limb after all? His whole body can be affected. So rather, Rabbeinu Chananel explains, you have a story with Moshe Rabbeinu in Parashas Shmos when he failed to make a bris milah for his son, and the pasuk says, v'yifkasheu Hashem v'yivakesh hamisoi, the malach met up with him and threatened to kill him. Who's the him? So we usually understand that means Moshe Rabbeinu. We know the famous Rashi over there that says Malach was swallowing him up. But another way of understanding it is that the baby was the one in danger. So we see, in other words, the baby himself was in danger for lack of bris milah. So Kavah Chaimah, then that regular Pekuach Nefesh is Deicha Shabbos. So those three chachamim, each of those three chachamim who were walking on the road over there provided their own answer to this. Now we have other answers that were told, that were said at different other occasions. Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda Omer, the pasuk says, Es shabsoise tishmoru, the pasuk says you should keep my shabbosim. Yachol akol, you would think that applies across the board. You always have to keep Shabbos even when the Ruach Nefesh is involved. No, Talmud Lema, ach cholak. The pasuk doesn't just say shabsoise tishmoru. It says ach es shabsoise tishmoru. The word ach means to divide things up, that only in some cases do you have to keep Shabbos. Namely, not when the Ruach Nefesh is involved. Rabbi Yonas and Ben Yosef Omer, another way, the pasuk, the same pasuk continues, ki kodesh hi lachem, because it is holy to you. Actually, it's a different pasuk, but whatever. Because it is holy to you, implying he misurah b'yedchem v'lay atem misurim b'yada. You are, Shabbos is given over to you to keep. You are not given over to Shabbos. In other words, that your life, a yid's life, is more important than Shabbos. The other day, in fact, when we had the Gemara about the fact that Pekuach Nefesh is doicha most things in the Torah, Rashi explained over there the idea is a Jewish life is precious, and therefore most mitzvahs are overridden because of it. So he was saying Shabbos is like that as well. Rav Shimon Menasseh, the pasuk says v'shomru bnei Yisrael to Shabbos. The pasuk says the Jewish people should observe Shabbos, which implies omra Torah chalal all of Shabbos achas, violate one Shabbos because of him. Today she yishmer Shabbos is harbe, in order that in the future he'll be able to keep many Shabbosim. Now that one, as we said before, so that one wouldn't necessarily apply if the person is, let's say, only going to live a short amount of time. It wouldn't necessarily apply, let's say, if the person, it wouldn't necessarily apply if the person is a shoyta. Nevertheless, the din still applies. There are mepharshim who say that maybe Rav Shimon Menasseh wants to limit the din that the Pekuach Nefesh only applies where we know that there's a chance that there's going to be Shabbos as Harbe, but the majority of mepharshim say not like that. It doesn't matter.
But there's all the other reasons.
There's all the other reasons anyway, right? In fact, interesting, earlier in the Masechta, you know, we had the story of Hillel on the rooftop over there, where on the skylight, where they take him down and they say, Roy Zeh, L'chalol of Shabbos. So the question of wondering, Roy Zeh, any person is Roy to be L'chalol Shabbos for? One of the answers is based on this, that they're saying that even if he was only going to be able to live Chaye Shah, and based on one way of understanding Rav Shimon Menasseh, usually we wouldn't be L'chalol Shabbos for him, but somebody like that, somebody of that caliber who was Moisin Nefesh to learn Torah, for him it would be worthwhile to be Mechalal even for Chaya Shah, because every Chaya Shah of such a person is a tremendous thing. Okay. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, I Havoi Hosam, so Rabbi Yehuda tells us in the name of Shmuel, if Shmuel had been there, these were all Tanoim that are discussing, so there were a couple of generations before Shmuel. If I had been there, Hava Amina, I would have said, Didi Adifa Mididhu, I have a better limud than all of theirs. Namely, the pasuk says v'chai b'hem. The pasuk says you should live through mitzvahs, meaning v'lo shayamus b'hem. Mitzvahs is not supposed to be that a person should die through them, with the exception of the big three, and with the exception of shas hashmag, etc. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava l'chulu islo pircha. As a matter of fact, actually, all of the other ones we can find a way to slug them up. By minishmul the less like pircha, except for shmuls, there's no way of slugging that up. Namely, let's go through them. Dear Rabbi Shmuel, who wants to learn it from the case of the Ganav who's breaking in, and he's saying it's a suffix. Maybe it's not a suffix. Maybe the reason why it's allowed to kill him, even though, as we said, bloodshed is such a serious thing, is based on what Rava says. The Omer Rava, my time of the Machteres, what is the reason? Usually a Ganav is not Chayiv Nisa, so why over here does the Torah allow the Balabas to kill him? Chazaka, we have a chazaka that a person is not going to hold himself back when he sees his money being taken. Therefore, the Ghana was breaking in, knows that the Balabas is going to stand up against him and try to prevent him. But Omar, so he thinks to himself, if the Balabas stands up against me, then I'll kill him. And the Torah tells you that if somebody is trying to kill you, kill them first. So therefore, in other words, it's not a matter of a suffix. It pretty much amounts to a vadai. So it's based on a chazaka, and a chazaka is strong enough often to be considered like a vadai. So according to that, then it would mean right. So applying that to here, it would mean right. So if you have vadai pikuach nefesh, then sure. But when it's a suffix, like we're talking about an armish, now how would you get that from that? Next, so Vashkechan Vaday, so the Gemara says, so we see that that would apply to Vaday, Suffolk Manolan. Where would we see from that even in a case of Suffolk, you would apply that? Dirabakiva Nami, we can't, Rabakiva's Limud also, there's a way of slogging it up. Dilma Kedabaya, after all, when we say, so what is Rabakiva saying? That the Kohen is in the middle of the Avoida, and we tell him, stop your Avoida, come to Beis Din, we need you to say Eidus to exonerate this guy. Well, we said that after all, it's a Suffolk whether what he says is going to make any sense. Well, Dilma Kedabaya. Maybe we do like what Abaya says in a different context. You have, when a person is being taken out to be executed by Beis Din, then we send along with him two Talmid Chachamim for the purpose of, let's say on the way, he himself says, you know what, I just thought of something that will exonerate me. So the Talmid Chachamim listen to what he has to say. They see, does this make sense, al pi halacha? And if yes, then they tell the people, stop, let's return to Beis Din and let Beis Din hear what he has to say. So therefore, it's not a stopping. So maybe the same thing over here. We give him a pair of Talmid Chachamim, to see whether what he's saying has any validity to it. So again, so maybe with this case of the Kohen serving on the Mizbeach, the same thing. If we have reason to think that the Kohen has evidence, we'll send two Talmid Chacham over there, let them hear what the Kohen has to say. They'll evaluate, does this sound like something that Beis Din is likely to take into consideration? And if yeah, then fine, then come with us. Then it's not a Suffolk anymore, then it's a Vadai. So again, Va'ashkechan Vadeh. So again, Va'ashkechan Vadeh, Suffolk Manola. And how would we know that it applies even in a case of a Suffolk? And V'chulu Ashkechan Vadeh, Suffolk Manola. We go through each of the other ones. It only works with a Vadeh. Rav Elazar ben Azariah learned from Mila. Well, only Mila that's Vadeh is Doicha Shabbos. When you have a Suffolk, whether the baby was born before Shabbos or on Shabbos, then you don't do the Bris Mila. The other ones also, he misurav yedchem, chal Shabbos achas kedesh yish meshabbos es habay. All of those only suggest where we have a vaday that he's going to continue living and be able to keep other Shabbosim, and then you're giving and Shabbos is given over into your hands. Where do we get by all of them? Suffolk menolon or the Shmuel vaday less le pircha. But when it comes to Shmuel's, when the pasuk says Asher Yasa Oisam Adam B'Chai Bahem, then it's clear that it means even there shouldn't be even be a suffix. It shouldn't even be that doing mitzvahs can lead to a suffix of that the person might have to die. Therefore, we see that yes, you do your Machal Shabbos even for a suffix. So therefore, Vade Lesley Pircha, there's no way of slugging up Shmuel, and therefore that's the best living. Amar Ravina B'Tamer of Nachmei Yitzchak. This is like the expression Tava Pilpalta Charifa. Tava chada pilpalta charifta. One sharp pepper is much better than a whole basketful of pumpkins. In other words, like this, you have the pumpkin, the great chachamim, the tanoim. All of them have things that we can slug up, and then you have one tiny little peppercorn, and the taste of it overpowers all of those giant pumpkins. In the same way, the Shmuel was a much lesser caliber talmid chacham because he's an amora compared to tanoim, and yet his limud is the one that's unimpeachable. The last Mishnah of the Masechta. Now we've been talking about the whole Masechta, the Avodah of Yom Kippur, the Dinim of Yom Kippur. Now let's talk about the Yom Kippur is the time of Tshuva. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva, it's a mitzvah for everybody to do Tshuva on Yom Kippur. So now let's talk about Tshuva. The Mishnah says, Chatas v'oshem badei mechaprin. A chatas or an oshem badei are mechaprin for a person's Averis. Most of the Mephoshim say it means with tshuva, although the Shagas Aryeh in Gvura Sari wants to say that maybe not. Maybe a chatas is machapa even if the person is not fully doing tshuva. Let's say he didn't say vidui for his aveda while he's bringing the curtain. Anyway, so well, so a chatas by definition is brought for a shoygi, with a couple of rare. Well, shacharuk has an osham. So what you have is, okay, you have like this. There's two types of chatos, and then there's osham. The most averus that a person does, he brings a chatos for, is a fixed chatos, a female sheep or a female goat, and those are only for things that he does the shogig. Then you have, there's a type of chatos called a korban oyla v'yored, where the tumas mitzvah kodshav and certain other, and then there's shavuos bitui and some other ones. There are one or two of those that you do bring even for a mazid. And then you have an osham, you have the various ones, asham zelos, asham ne'ilos, many of them are brought for things that are mazid as well. Okay. So all of those, so those are mechaper. Misav, yem ha'kipurim, mechaper im ha'tshuva. When a person dies, or when Yom Kippur comes, then such things are mechaper together with tshuva, meaning Yom Kippur by itself, or the person dying by itself is not enough to give him kapara, there needs to be tshuva. For example, in connection, we were just talking about people who are executed by Beis Din. The Mishnah tells us in Sanhedrin that before the person is executed, they tell him, say vidui. And that way your death will be a kapara for you. We'll learn in the Gemara, Bas Hashem. We'll learn tomorrow what kind of things require what kind of kapara. What things is enough? Is tshuva enough? What kind of things do you also need your kippur? What kind of things is there also misa? The Mishnah continues, tshuva mechaperas al averus kalis. Tshuva by itself is mechaper for lighter averus, meaning al esev al loiseseh, for eses and for loiseses. We'll see in the Gemara what kind of eses and what kind of loiseses. Ba'al chamuris, as far as more serious averus, and we'll define in the Gemara what the more serious ones are, hu toila, tshuva by itself suspends his punishment, ad sheyavo yom kippur, mechaper until Yom Kippur comes and accomplishes the complete kapara. So in other words, for those more serious averus, there's a two-stage thing. There's tshuva, and then there's also you need Yom Kippur as well to be mechaper. The Alter Rebbe explains in Igeres HaTshuva in Perek Aleph that the idea is because on Yom Kippur you're lifnei Hashem, you're like on a higher level even than Shem Avaya, and therefore that's able to take care of even more serious averus, which in other words within Shem Avaya, within Seder Ishtalshalos, there'd be no way to deal with such things, but because you're going l'mayla m'Shem Avaya. The Meiri, on the other hand, actually says a little more of a balabatish thing. He says practically speaking, the average person only reaches a high level of tshuva on Yom Kippur, but in principle, if a person were to reach that high level throughout the year, then sure, it would be mechaper for him right away. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Ha'omer echtav oshuv, echtav oshuv. If a person says repeatedly, I will do an avera and then I will do tshuva, ein maspikin v'yodeh lasis tshuva. Hashem does not give him the opportunity to do tshuva, which the Alter Rebbe explains in Igeres HaTshuva, and various other mephoshim before him explain similarly. It doesn't mean he can't do tshuva. It means Hashem gives a person opportunities to do tshuva. Here Hashem won't provide him those opportunities. But dochak v'nichnas, he pushes his way in and does tshuva, then ein l'chadova im r'pnei tshuva. On the other hand, the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva seems to say a little differently. The Rambam writes that there's 24 cases where a person is prevented from doing tshuva, and among them is Echtav Oshuv, where, in other words, that Hashem like hardens his heart, like you have by Pare and whatever, and makes it more difficult for him to do tshuva.
Still, even
according to the Rambam, if doch benichnas, he can still make his way in, right? And the idea is because since the fact that there exists tshuva is itself what's causing him to do the avera, therefore how can Hashem give him an opportunity to do tshuva? Why it repeats
after?
You can't be mechal. You can't have the kapara of Yom Kippur if you're violating Yom Kippur itself, right? So we'll see in the Gemara also why the double expression, why he says echta ba'ashuv, echta ba'ashuv. So actually, yes, the Gemara is going to say, because that hints at the idea that once a person does an aveda twice, then he feels already like something that's mutter to do. But with that said, though, there are some mephoshim that point out, if he were to do this only once, maybe it wouldn't be so bad, because then maybe he's doing it in order to have the opportunity to do the mitzvah of tshuva. After all, a person has to fulfill all the mitzvahs. One of them is the mitzvah of tshuva. So then he could get away with it. But once he does it twice, then he doesn't have that excuse.
Don't try it at home.
Next. echta v'yem kippurim mechaper. If the person says, I will do the Avera and Yom Kippur will clean it up, and yem kippurim mechaper, then again, Yom Kippur is not mechaper because, again, the fact that he's doing the Avera because he thinks he can get away with it because of Yom Kippur, and then next, Averas shemen onon lamokam yem kippurim mechaper. When a person does Averas between him and Hashem, then Yom Kippur is mechaper for those. But Averas shemen onon machaber, in yem kippur mechaper ad shiirates chaber. For those, Yom Kippur is not mechaper until he appeases the other guy and asks him mechila. And the Gemara, the Mishnah continues. Dorash Rav Elazar ben Azariah. In this connection, Rav Elazar ben Azariah darshan the pasuk when it says mikrocha tesechem lifnei Hashem titaru, from all of your averus before Hashem you will be cleansed. So lifnei Hashem goes on mikrocha tesechem. Averus from an onla makom yemak kibur mechaper. Averus from an onla chaber en yemak kibur mechaper. Adshiyat es chaberoi. So therefore, we see from that, from the fact that it says lifnei Hashem, that only the averus lifnei Hashem are cleaned up by Yom Kippur, but the ones lifnei chaberoi, you need that as well. Omer Rabbi Akiva finishes off, and on the face of it, Rabbi Akiva is just finishing off with a piece of Agadah over here about Shuvah, but there are actually, we'll talk in a second, it's possible that he's referring back to what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying. He says, Ashreichem Yisrael, happy are you Yisrael, lifnei mi atem mitarim, before who are you cleansed of your Averis, mi mitaris, from who is actually cleansing you, none other than Avichem Shabashmaim, your father in Shemaim, Hashem himself. As the pasuk says, I will sprinkle on you pure water, and you will become clean. But Omer, you have the doubt that ever brings in Tanya the idea, like you have like the king or like the mother over there who lowers themselves to clean up their child's filth. That's how it is when Hashem is cleaning up the filth of our avodas. But Omer, and also the pasuk says, Mikvi Yisrael Hashem. Literally, in the simple meaning of the pasuk mikveh over there means the hope of the Jewish people is Hashem. But he's dashing it Moshe mikveh, as in a mikveh that you toivo in. Mam mikveh mataris atmeim, just like a mikveh purifies people who are tamei. Afakadosh Baruch Hu mataris Yisrael, the same way Hashem purifies the Jewish people. What the comparison to a mikveh, there's a couple of different angles on that. One is when a person tovels, they have to tovel completely in the mikveh. We know if even one hair sticks out, then the tevilah, that doesn't work. The same way when a person is doing tshuva and a person is reconnecting to Hashem, it can't just be, well, I'm only sort of reconnecting to Hashem. You gotta put yourself into it. There is something though. I think it's someplace in a sicha that the idea, on the other hand, what if you have, for example, a person has many different averus, and right now they don't feel strong enough to do tshuva for all of them. Right now, a person is just feeling, I'll do tshuva for some of them. Nevertheless, the same way as, for example, you can have a person that's tomei with many, let's say a person can be tomei mess, as well as tomei from a sheretz, let's say, and he tovels in the mikveh, and that takes away the tshuva sheretz. He's still tomei mess, but it still is effective as far as the transfer, let's say, for example, he was tomei as a zov or what have you, and he tovels, so that helps with that, even though he's still tomei mess. The same way, a person does tshuva for some of his avedas, then that itself is acceptable, and then he'll do tshuva for the other ones later on when he feels more able to do that. Now, there is, some of the Mephoshim say that actually Rabbi Akiva may be disagreeing with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is telling us that Averis bein Adam l'chaveiro, you need to be Miratzes chaveiro, and without that it's no good. Rabbi Akiva, on the other hand, is saying, listen, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, you're taking the word Lifnei Hashem and attaching it to the word Mikol Chatesechem, that only Mikol Chatesechem Lifnei Hashem, only your Averis in front of Hashem, Kitoru will be cleaned up. No, actually, we should say that Lifnei Hashem refers to the Titaru. Before Hashem, you're cleansed. So there isn't necessarily that distinction. Or at least, he's not going to say that if a person did an Avera ben Anum L'Chaveri, he doesn't have to ask Mechila. But he's going to say, in other words, when you think of it, a person does an Avera ben Anum L'Chaveri, there's also an Anum L'Mokam component to it. So therefore, if he does Shuvah on that part, then that part will be taken care of. Yeah, the ben Anum L'Chaveri part, he's still going to have to pay the guy back and appease him and so forth. But, yeah. When we say over here the expression lifnei miyatim mitarim mi mitareshem, the Tosfos Yomtiv says it refers to two different kinds of people who do tshuva. You have the people who are able to do it under their own power, lifnei miyatim mitarim, before whom are they becoming tar? And then you have the people that they don't have the strength to do it on their own, and the Eibushter helps them out. That's a mi mitareshem, and Hashem works on being mitar them. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. When we say in the Mishnah, Chatas v'osham v'adei mechaperin, what do you mean? Osham v'adei ein osham toloi loy? You're telling me an osham toloi is not mechaper? V'akaporek sivabei. Doesn't the pasuk, when it describes a person bringing an osham toloi, it also says that he has kapara. The answer is, the difference is, hanach mechaperi kapara gmura. The difference is that a chatas and an osham bring a complete kapara. Osham toloi, ein mechaper kapara gmura. An Oshem Toleri is not a complete kapara. All it is the case of an Oshem Toleri is, for example, let's say the classic case is a person had two pieces of chalev in front of him, and he ate, or two pieces of fat, rather. One is chalev, one is truman. He doesn't know which is which. He ate one, the other one got lost, and now he's not sure whether he did the Avera. He brings an Oshem Toleri. But if all that does is it suspends his punishment, but if he ever finds out that the one he ate was chalev, he is going to have to bring a chatas. Therefore, in that sense, the Oshem Toleri is not a complete kapara, unlike when a person brings a chatas or an chatas or an Oshem Vaday, then that's it. His kapara is over and done. Inami, or another possibility, the difference is Hanach in Acher Mechaper Kaparosan. The difference is when a person needs a chatas or an Oshem Vaday, there's no substitute for it. There's nothing else that would accomplish the same kapara. Oshem Toleri Acher Mechaper Kaparosan. Another reason the mission doesn't mention an Oshem Toleri is because there's something else that can accomplish the same thing. The Tanan, as in fact we learn in a Mishnah in Chrysos, Chayove Chatois Vashomis Vajoyin Sha'ova Alein Yom Kippurim. If a person was Chayav Achatas or an Oshem Vaday, and Yom Kippur passed and he hadn't yet brought the carbon, Chayovin, they're still Chayav to bring the carbon, but Ashomis Tzloyin, but if he's Chayav and Oshem Toleri, and Yom Kippur passed, Pturin, then he's Potter because Yom Kippur itself is Mechaper for that potential, for that possible Aveda that he did. So therefore the Mishnah is not mentioning Oshem Toleri because it's not always a given that a person has to bring an Oshem Toleri, where it is a given that if a person did something that makes him chayav, a chatas, so an Oshem Vaday, that he's going to have to bring that, and there's nothing else that can accomplish the same kapara. Okay. To be continued tomorrow, Baruch Hashem. Shkoyach, everyone.
Thank you.